and welcome to 42 Talks. I'm Jude Shepherd. I'm a member of the employment team here at 42 BR Barristers. And I'm delighted to be joined today by one of our civil clerks, Ellie Sanders, as well as talent retention and women's leadership specialist, Nikki Alderson. Today, we're going to be following on from our discussion that we released on International Women's Day back in March, where we discussed confidence and career progression and things like returning to the bar and the issues in the clerk's room. And particularly now we've got the benefit of Nikki joining us and her coaching specialisms. We thought it'd be a good opportunity to carry on that conversation and possibly, hopefully, get some practical tips on what to do and improve some of these issues. So Ellie and Nikki, I wonder whether you want to just introduce yourselves.
Sure. So as you've said, I'm Nikki Alderson. I am a talent retention and women leadership specialist. So I do coaching and training in this space, but also I'm a former barrister. So I had 19 years at the Criminal Bar in Yorkshire, but now use the things that I learned within the profession to still support women to stay within the profession. And so that's what I do now. I've been doing it for 7 years.
Hi, I'm Ellie Sanders. I'm one of the civil clerks at 42 Bedford Row. I've been a clerk for nearly 8 years, spanning across quite a few different subject matters and areas. And I help with day-to-day diary management, from business development to, you know, being someone, a confidant and main supporter of barristers in our chambers.
So one of the things that came up during our discussion on International Women's Day, and by the way, if you want to catch up on the discussion, there will be a link to that recording in the podcast description, so you can go back and see that panel discussion we had back in March. But one of the things that came up, in particular, Nikki, was the dreaded imposter syndrome, which I'm afraid I know is something that I definitely have suffered from over my years in my career at the bar. And I think it's a common theme for many women in all sorts of careers at the bar. And I wondered whether you had any thoughts to share, Nikki, on imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it's interesting to start off, I think, by actually calling it imposter syndrome, because I know some people find that term actually really triggering. Because actually, if you look at it in a different way, it isn't actually a syndrome at all. It isn't. It almost sounds medicalized, doesn't it, somehow? I mean, the reality is that in life, when we are under pressure or we are facing challenge, then it may be that we feel that we are a little bit uncertain and we have to dig deep and, you know, overcome certain challenges. I always say that now at the outset when I talk about confidence and imposter syndrome, because some people find it really unhelpful to label it. Having said that, there are lots and lots of my clients who, when you start talking about, you know, being that person where if you're going for promotion, you feel like, well, you're not ready or you're not worthy or that you don't have enough qualifications, people can absolutely relate to that. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a particular syndrome or issue. It is just a natural part of growth and development. So yeah, I mean, there are loads and loads of things to talk about here in terms of how you might overcome that. But I just wonder, you know, when you've said that it's something that you're very familiar with within your line of work, I mean, do you think that that's something that you have conquered, or is that something that you just have learned to live with? Be interesting to hear, to know whether there are other strategies that might help.
I think I've just learned to live with it, and I'm constantly trying to challenge myself over it. So I'm constantly reminding myself that I'm here for a reason. I've worked hard to get where I've got to, but I don't think it ever goes away. I've resigned myself to the fact that imposter syndrome is just going to always be one of those things that is with me in my career, and that maybe there are positives to it, and maybe that's what keeps me sharp and keeps me focused and keeps me working harder to be a better barrister.
Yeah.
Ellie, what do you think?
I think it's hard for me, because I feel like Jude said, and I'll probably echo it, that I think I've just learned to live with that kind of, you know, as women, we often face additional challenges, I think, anyway. That being like fewer opportunities you feel like you have earlier on, even if you don't, or an unconscious bias, or simply like the pressure to prove myself more. I don't know if that's just like, as a clerk, obviously you have real responsibility to actively build on confidence yourself and you're, you know, wanting to promote barristers for and advocate for them with clients. And I suppose fostering that culture to celebrate rather than scrutinize is something that I suppose I try and echo myself to do. But actually from a viewpoint from outside, am I actually achieving that or not?
Yeah, it's so easy to give the advice to other people, isn't it? But taking it on yourself is always difficult. One thing to think about, I think, when you have those little moments, right, is to, well, firstly, be aware of it, as you both seem to be, you know, and have an awareness around the fact that there is a little voice in your head which is saying perhaps unhelpful things. It may be you could reframe that to think, well, actually, that voice is somehow keeping me safe. It's stopping me doing something silly or whatever, I don't know. But once you've identified that there is something going on there, you could certainly say, well, actually, do you want to listen to that little voice? Because is it stopping you getting on? So if it was a critical friend, let's say, would you actually be friends with that person? If it's not serving you, then you might want to leave it behind. And a really simple technique to do that and to sort of switch it off or dial it down at least is in those moments when you're thinking, oh, I can't do this, or I'm not doing enough preparation, or my goodness, there's a lot of people in this audience, or whatever it is, I don't know. Just ask yourself, is that fact or is that feeling? And Ellie, as you've sort of said, absolutely celebrate the times when you have overcome something, or that you have had a good result in a case, or you've had some great feedback from a client. And actually in that moment, identify that it is purely a feeling, chances are it will be a feeling. And there are at least three things that you can find as evidence to disprove that myth or that lie that you are telling yourself. And then once you have those three to five, or why stop at that, however many examples of your past brilliance, then absolutely focus on it. Because the more that you focus on those positives, the less noisy that voice will be. And the tendency to, you know, focus on the positives and celebrate all your great achievements. It's absolutely imperative internally that you can do that to overcome it, I think. There are also some external things. I don't know whether these would help as well. But, you know, imagining yourself as a confident person in a particular scenario. We've all seen, haven't we, the swan that sort of swims on the water's edge looking totally poised and together, even if it's, you know, paddling madly under the water's edge. Actually, if you can externally exude confidence, so actually what you do find is that projecting that, clients, for example, will feel more confident in you. They will articulate themselves in a way that shows that they have confidence in you, and that of itself will then help you to sort of spiral upwards and think, well, you know what? They actually think I know what I'm talking about here. I absolutely do. And so there's an upward spiral effect as a result. And so there is really something about how you carry yourself as well, how you articulate yourself. And even if internally you feel like you're sort of falling apart, that external piece can be really, really helpful as well, I find. You know, even if it's a mask until you start believing it yourself.
That's definitely something I recognise. I have been faking it till I make it for years now. You know, just walking into unfamiliar situations, say it's a tribunal you've not been in before or a court you've not been in before, trying to familiarise yourself with it, but at the same time, just giving the impression that you're very au fait with all of this somehow just seems to persuade whatever it is going on in your brain that actually, no, this is all going to be okay. I think a lot of barristers have that balance between being that terrible overthinker, that person who thinks they've never done enough preparation because you never feel fully prepared. That's, after all, what gives you the edge. But at the same, having to tell yourself when push comes to shove, no, I can do this. I've got this. I have prepared. It's sort of two sides of the same coin, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that. The fact that you, in that moment as well, say, I can do this, because there's another thing that you can do. You know, sometimes clients think I've slightly lost the plot when I say this, but positive affirmations can really help there. There was a great program, actually, I think it was called Limitless on Disney Plus with Chris Helmsley, who was doing all these crazy mad challenges where they were sort of pushing themselves to the limit in terms of doing these physically difficult challenges, but sort of doing mind over matter piece. And absolutely to be able in that moment to say, I can do this, you can do this, what, you know, whether you want first or third person, whatever. It was really powerful, actually. One particular woman who had had a terrible car accident years before, and I think being told that she would never walk again. And actually, she'd not only overcome that disability, but also had been able to start walking again. She was doing this tightrope walk across this tiny sheer cliff with no ropes or harnesses or whatever. But actually, she'd done it by all these affirmations in her head about you can do this. It was incredible to watch. But it can be so powerful, even to the point of having, as other clients have had, a little post-it. I mean, this is old school now, but post-it note on the back of your mobile phone or in your pocket or something. So at that moment in core where you have a little wobble, you can just whip something out and just remind yourself, you know, I have got this, or you can do this. Or even writing down those three skills or strengths that you have to absolutely switch your mindset in that moment is very powerful. And very useful.
Interestingly, I think having to be positive for my daughter, who's 12 now, you end up having to do a lot of that. You can do this, tell yourself you can do this with your children, which is not something I ever had growing up. I think I had too much of a blunt northern family who were very much the opposite. There were no positive affirmations going on, but I've had to learn to do that for my daughter. And it really has rubbed off on me. I think it's Mel Robbins who wrote a book or something about giving yourself a high five in the mirror every morning. You know, sounds so terribly cheesy, but actually, you know, once you start doing it, thinking, oh, you know, and try and get my daughter to do this so that she feels better about herself, you think, I feel quite good now. I should do this more often. So maybe, Ellie, we should all be giving ourselves high fives in the Clark's room of a morning.
Yeah, I'll do it tomorrow, I reckon. I think it is that thing of like linked to probably, from a Clarking perspective, and what I've found working in chambers is probably the visibility of like where you can place yourself going forward, and where sometimes I've looked around the room and thought, do I fit in here? And it's not even based on always being the only female in the room, which obviously in the civil team I am at the moment. I've got loads of female colleagues as well. But I think it's more, you're hoping that the visibility of the female clerks going to the more senior end is something that then obviously aspires and look to. And I suppose that's not even just the females, I suppose. It's just kind of finding those people that you link with supportiveness, and you kind of, those people are the people that you surround yourself with, especially within a work environment, and their feedback and their confidence can kind of rub off on you in a sense, that I'd say. And I would wear a mask, I reckon, on my first few weeks here. But at the end of the day, once you get past that, I think your internal support system and culture here is what you deal with 5 days a week. And that's like more time than with your family and friends sometimes. So you get to know each other quite quickly.
That definitely resonates with me. I think the point is, the bar is a place of huge privilege. You see a lot of privilege around you. And for somebody like me who comes from a working class background, it's always felt like a slightly alien place. I've always felt like I don't quite belong. I don't think I will ever get over that. But also, by the same token, I'm very conscious of that feeling. So that feeds down into how I treat my colleagues, how I speak to people, so that I never give people the impression that I might have had sometimes when I was a junior barrister, that maybe I wasn't quite good enough or wasn't quite as important for other people because of my start in life. I'm very conscious of making sure that whoever I come across, whoever they are, that I make them feel that they are important and what their views are do count.
I think it's important as well, as you say, to surround yourself with the right people, though. I'm not talking about from the privileged point of view, but just the right positive or negative people, because your energy can absolutely be influenced and affected by the people that you are surrounding yourself with. So if you have a tendency to be a worrier or anxious or whatever, then try and find other people who are those that inspire you and that you can see, as you've mentioned, as a role model, for example. And then there's nothing wrong with being a copycat or, you know, imitating them and thinking, right, well, she's absolutely nailing it, let's say, so I'm going to do a bit more of that, you know, and thinking about what qualities, whatever they bring. Visualization in coaching is a really huge part of this piece as well. I mean, actually, when I do training on it, I often use a slide, I'm showing how old I am here, but, you know, a slide of Wonder Woman, Linda Carter in her best red hot pants and gold lame, whatever. But I think there's something about getting into that image, or, you know, emulating what it is you want to be and having a crack at it as well, because that's going to bring you up rather than bring you down as well. It can be really powerful, that, I think.
Yeah, and thinking about who you want to be, I suppose, Nikki, have you got any tips on career progression at the bar, both for clerks from Ellie's perspective, but also from a barrister's perspective, and maybe for those women who want to take silk and perhaps are constantly telling themselves, you know, I don't think I've got what it takes. How can we tackle the imposter syndrome that pops up in those scenarios when you're looking to progress?
I suppose with imposter syndrome, it's all around if you cannot see it, you can't be it. But actually, Steve Bartlett, love him or loathe him, does a bit of an interesting reframe on this as well, that even if there are people that you cannot see that are like you within the room, then resolve to yourself that you are going to be that person. And it might take a lot of effort. It may take, you know, you digging deep and being the first, but why not? So that's why, firstly, I think role models are really important. But I also think it's very, very important to understand how these limiting beliefs and these things that we can tell ourselves can actually then play out. You know, when we start telling ourselves that we can't do something, then we don't apply for something, and it really then impacts on our opportunities to progress our careers. I mean, just as an example, we know that with silk applications, women tend only to apply when they're about 90% certain that they're going to succeed, whereas men apply when they're around 50-50. It could go either way. They throw their hat into the ring, give it a crack, and, you know, see what happens. So ultimately, straight off the bat, women in that scenario are not allowing themselves even the opportunity to be considered. So I'm a great believer in the whole ethos of you've got to be in it to win it. It equally applies to clerks as barristers, that if you want career progression, you need to make a plan for that. Often, for example, in silk, it's recommended that you take at least 3 years because you need that much evidence in terms of cases and so on that you'd need to evidence in your form. But equally, it may be a 3 to 5 year path. But I always think in this scenario, a great quote from Henry Ford is really useful here. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So, you know, really do watch that sort of self-talk and look at how having a certain view on confidence can impact on those opportunities to succeed at work.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting perspective. And have you got any sort of practical tips about almost how to make a start if you are that person? You know, of course, this is not me, who people keep saying, when are you going to apply for silk, Jude? You know, the sort of constant dialogue of people asking you and you just putting it off and putting it off and thinking, I'm too busy. I'll think about that next week, or I'll think about that next year, or I think is my imposter syndrome talking, definitely, and just using that excuse of just being too busy. I'm sure that must be a common thing for all barristers, and particularly women who maybe are juggling childcare and goodness knows what else with career, just thinking, oh my goodness, the whole idea of shaking things up and trying to apply for silk and everything that brings with it. I just can't even begin to think about that. Have you got any tips for breaking out of that cycle of just sticking your head in the sand?
Well, you know, you've identified it right there, that maybe if that is your way, the one thing you are not doing is beginning, right? And my advice, therefore, would simply be begin, even if it is only a question of taking some time out to make a plan, to think, right, what are the next steps here? Get your head out of that ground and think, right, what's got to happen for the next year, 2 years, 3 years, however long it is, but begin. There's another great quote, you know, start before you're ready. If you waited until you had all the right qualifications, all the right cases, all the, you know, right referees or whatever it is, you may never get going. But at the end of the day, you might have missed an opportunity at least to start building the case for getting to that point. Obviously, it's not an easy ride, but, you know, other things like if you are already very senior, but have not yet thought about or have not yet applied, you know, thinking about how you conduct yourself again, you know, thinking about how you can be more silk-like, whether that be because of the cases that you're taking on, or even, as you've mentioned about, you know, going into court in a certain way. I used to have a bit of a, well, I don't know whether you call it a joke, but lighthearted moment with a client of mine who was applying for silk. And our little mantra was be more silky. And so everything she did, she thought about how she held herself, how she conducted herself, going in for the more senior cases and conducting herself in a more silk-like fashion. But again, it was a little mantra that she said to herself in court to think, right, how would a silk deal with this? And it's all about that piece, if we're talking specifically about silk applications, about demonstrating that you are excellent at everything you do and how you can sort of channel that, if that's not the poor use of word, but, you know, channel that through everything that you do and making sure that everything you do do is towards that plan and that outcome, because you cannot score, or it's hard to score without a goal, right?
You've got to be in it to win it.
Exactly.
And typically, I think women who are thinking about applying for silk, of course, are probably very often at the stage in their lives where they are still juggling childcare, whether that's young children or teenagers, or, you know, or their children going off to university. So challenging times at the same time as possibly caring for elderly parents and all of those things that we're having to deal with. So it's a constant juggle of prioritization. Any tips on how we manage those things in our career, how we manage prioritizing, juggling between those aspects of our personal life and our work life?
Well, there are loads of tips, and I absolutely will share those. I think, honestly, my first starting point would be, Ellie, what would you say? Because if a barrister wants to progress their career, the best thing they can do is communicate with their clerk. So, Ellie, what have you noticed in terms of useful strategies communicating between barrister and clerk?
Yeah, I think like clerk's essential, just not only logistical support, but emotional support. And I suppose that comes with time. And that's why you see in chambers, and it's great to show chambers retention of long time serving clerks, where they, another next step of knowing a barrister inside and out is also having, you know, they say they are a colleague as well, as much as anything else, and having that kind of gauge, you'd hope you would welcome that kind of space where you could speak on a level of where they're actually feeling. I suppose we, as a chambers and as a clerk, you want to touch base with people that are returning, if that is them on a childcare issue or on returning from maternity or paternity leave. But in this case, I suppose for silks, it's like we should understand, not like we can tell them when they're ready, because it is a natural space where you think that barristers themselves, you know, but I think maybe having these kind of practice review meetings that we do have and tend to do, that should always kind of be, I suppose, at a certain level of year call, you know, what are your kind of thought processes on that? And like that welcomes and encourages, I suppose, open conversation. And I can't see it ever being a pushback, but maybe it's like constructive and supportive criticism if there is like, it will happen, this and that, but maybe not within this year, but it's more of like a five-year plan as such, or what can we do as a clerk to get them involved in certain things? Or we see that, oh, one of the kind of criteria that might be on a silk application is to show leadership skills. Therefore, when you're looking for your next case, you're thinking of, can a junior be brought on this with you to therefore tick that next box, if that is what you're feeling? But I think it's a difficult one to scope, but I feel like that is the beauty of the clerk and barrister relationship, is that you'd hope that you are happy with taking on the advice, and even if it's supportive or if it's somewhat critical. But I suppose like that's the kind of stage you want to be at with your clerk.
Yeah, we definitely do need a shove in the right direction occasionally from our clerks, for sure.
Yeah, but the support is so important though, particularly as Ellie's mentioned, for career break returners. And, you know, that I'm doing a lot of work on that at the moment. I do work a lot with career break returners. I've got online courses for returners. I've got online courses for clerks to returners as well. You know, this is a really important piece of my work. It's all about good communications, but also being really good at owning your time. And it's things around, well, I talk about two specific things. These may be helpful in terms of practical strategies. So the three P's and the four D's, right? So the three P's are planning, prioritization, and being present. And so that first piece is obviously being really well organized with your time, especially if you are a returner, and knowing what you need to get done in the day. Because if you do have something else that knocks you off course, then at least you have a plan that when you can then get back to it, you can just get straight on. That's always really helpful, but also prioritizing the tasks within that list. And it's the classic, I don't know whether you've read that book by Brian Tracy, Eat That Frog, you know, thinking about what is the worst task on your list. And if it were to eat a live frog in the day, do that first. Don't do all the little itty bitty things, but just get knuckled down into that really hard task first, get that off the to-do list, and then all the other little bits will fit in. But also, especially for returners, new parents and so on, being present. I mean, it is interesting because there's always this perception, and it is only a perception, that new parents and career break returners somehow are not going to put the work in because they'll be off to the nursery pickup and so on. But actually what I find with clients is they actually sort of are more efficient. They work much harder because they are on the clock, and they have therefore really good skills around organizing and planning their time and getting stuff done, because they know they have a hard deadline rather than a somewhere between 5 and 6, I need to leave Chambers. They just have to go. So they are really important to be present though in whatever you are doing, because I know, having done it myself as a mum of three, you know, it's so easy to have a child at nursery and then be flicking through your photos on Facebook or whatever, thinking, oh, I hope they're having a lovely time, or, you know, them being with them at the weekend, but then checking your phone thinking, oh God, I've got all this work to do. Decide which hat you're wearing and wear it, and therefore be present as the working parent in that moment. You'll be far more effective. Or be present with your children, for example, at the weekend, because again, you will then reduce that feeling of guilt or distraction, which can be so damaging to both work and also your personal and family life. I also mentioned the 4 Ds. So just really quickly to share those. This was a time management technique, I think first brought around with Eisenhower, and it was do, diarize, delegate, and delete. So that for every task that you receive, do that little sense check and ask, is this something that I need to do and only I can do it, and therefore it is something that I need to do right now because it's actually quite urgent? Is it something that I need to do, but actually it isn't urgent and therefore I can diarize it? Is it something actually that although I'm being asked to do it and it's important, I can delegate that to somebody else? So for example, if you are in a case, is it something that if you've got a junior, you can delegate to your junior, or even if you're not leading someone, whether you can give it to your solicitor or a pupil to do some research or whatever. And then finally, if it's just complete waste of time, exercise, whatever it is, if you're faffing about on social media or whatever, you know, delete. That's always a good button to press, right? If it's not a good use of time, then just get rid of it altogether. I'm a big believer, by the way, of social media for business reasons, but we've all done it, haven't we? The X rabbit hole.
We certainly have, yes, yeah, when we need to get stuck into that cross-examination prep and what we actually do is scan through Facebook. Yeah, yeah. Those are fantastic tips, Nikki. That's been so helpful. I think we could talk, couldn't we, all day about some of the challenges that we all face and what we could do about them, but we probably shouldn't. I think maybe we might now draw that to a close. Please do tune in to the panel discussion we had for International Women's Day, where you can see our panel talking about some of these issues. And please do look Nikki up if you want further tips on managing some of these challenges. Thanks very much for tuning in to 42 Talks. We hope you really enjoyed the podcast. And if you want to listen to other episodes, you can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Thanks. Goodbye.